Thank you so much, Brother Clifton. Let's take our Bibles. Let's turn to Ruth chapter 2 this morning. Ruth chapter 2. While you're turning there, let me just tell you that this morning we're going to look at the grace in Ruth chapter 2. And I realize that Valentine's Day is a reminder of grace, because when you start talking about love, there's always grace connected with love, especially when you're thinking about that romantic significant other, that there's a whole lot of grace that it takes for someone to love someone like me. And I recognize that this morning. You know, sometimes people want you to go ahead. They want you to bless their poor decisions by getting you to agree with them. And I'm just now learning this at this point in my life, that you don't always have to speak out and you don't have to find that consensus, because sometimes it gets you in trouble. Not too long ago, I was talking with someone, a man and his wife, and he was telling me about a tradition that they have taken up. Made a lot of sense. I just want to tell you, as far as the budget items go, it sounded entirely reasonable. This fella said that what he does is he takes his wife to the greeting card store, and they'll walk the aisles, and he'll find the perfect card for her, and he'll hand it to her and say, "This is the one I would buy for you, but I'm not paying $10 for a greeting card. So you read it, we'll put it on the shelf, and we'll leave." He said, "Don't you think that sounds reasonable?" Now, just speaking purely from the numbers and just from the pocketbook's sake, that sounds entirely reasonable. But realizing what's at stake, it is utter nonsense. And I looked at the wife and I said, "So is this a good thing or a bad thing?" She said, "I've just come to accept it." And he smiled. He said, "Don't you think more people should do that?" And I did not respond, because I knew had I responded, I would damn myself. And I have joked with Melina a time or two, "Baby, let's go on over to the greeting card store. I'd like to show you what I would get you at the greeting card store." And then I got thinking, you know what? Bigger than that, the next time I need to buy her a gift, "Honey, let's just go to the department store and let me show you what I would have bought you." And I realized that's a slippery slope. So if you're thinking about that today, or you talked to that fella, or you heard that, I want you to know, I have nothing to say. This morning, as we look at Ruth chapter 2, and we're going to get into that story that I titled in your letter that was, we announced this series. I said it's about the billionaire and the farmhand, and today we are going to look at reaping redemption and the gracious response that we find in the barley field. Now, as we started this series, it has been our understanding, as we look at what living life as a redeemed believer and follower of Jesus looks like, it is living out redemption in our life every day. It's when you've been saved from heartache and misery and you've been saved from sin, not going back to sin is our testimony that we are redeemed, that we've been freed from that penalty of sin. We are yielding our lives daily to be yielded and to be freed from the power of sin in our daily life. But sin is pretty powerful, and sometimes people stumble and fall. And a lot of times people go back to their old ways. When we think about redemption, redemption is turning from our sin to be saved. Someone who's that tempted, rather than this series, is redemption is giving up what is worthless for what is right. Not going back to the hog trough, but moving forward. We look at redemption's obstacles. In the first chapter, there are quite a few chapter obstacles that we see. There were poor choices that were made by Elimelech and his family, and they went far away into Moab. Their stubbornness perhaps kept them away in that 10 years that they were gone, that they didn't feel welcome or undeserving to go back, and that there was, as we look at Naomi's statement in chapter 1, she says she wants to be known as bitterly, because the Lord had dealt with her bitterly. And sometimes heartaches and sometimes hardship moves us to bitterness. But this morning, we're going to look at addressing the issue of being unwelcome. Because sometimes that has a way of wanting to drive you away when you feel like you're not welcome. So we look this morning at Ruth chapter 2, and I want you to see this point. A little grace goes a long way. Would you join me in prayer as we ask the Lord to bless our time together? Let us pray. Lord Jesus, I come to you this morning and I lift up your name. And Lord, I praise you, the fact that you came. And as Brother Clifton shared with us this morning, John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. And Lord, the sweet story of your love for us, how you came and gave your life for us. Lord, the opportunities that we have as the redeemed to do right. And I pray, Lord, this morning that as we look at Ruth chapter 2 and as we consider that we might be in one of two camps, either we are in the place needing a blessing or we're in the position of giving the blessing. I pray, Lord, that our lives as believers would be modeled and they would magnify your grace. So Lord, transform our heart today. May a little bit of grace go a long way, Lord, as you bless our time together in your word. Lord, that little bit of grace, I ask that you would give me clear thoughts that would communicate clear principles, that our hearts and our lives would be marked by your graciousness. And we ask these things in your name. Amen. This morning, as we look at Ruth chapter 2, we're going to look at the billionaire and the farmhand. And I invite you to look with me in verses 1 through 7 this morning. And Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a mighty man of wealth, of the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said unto Naomi, let me now go to the field and glean ears of corn after him in whose sight I shall find grace. And she said unto her, go, my daughter. And she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And her hap was to light on a part of the field belonging unto Boaz, who was of the kindred of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said unto the reapers, the Lord be with you. And they answered him, the Lord bless thee. Then said Boaz unto his servant that was set over the reapers, whose damsel is this? And the servant that was set over the reapers answered and said, it is the Moabitish damsel that came back with Naomi out of the country of Moab. And she said, I pray you, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came and hath continued even from the morning until now that she tarried in a little in the house. And we find here in Ruth chapter 2, we meet Boaz. And it's almost as if the story is just so good that Samuel, as he was writing it down, could not hold back the fact that we're going to meet Boaz, because he starts off in verse 1 letting us know about Boaz, and that's a big deal. He wants us to know about the name of Boaz because something big is going to happen for Ruth. She's going to happen upon the field of Boaz. It's just a simple blessing. Do you remember when Naomi and Ruth make their way back to the small town of Bethlehem, why it was that they returned? That was in part of this food. And we've looked at Naomi's heart, and I believe she is broken, and I believe that she wants to do what's right. I see Ruth wants the change of heart, follow after Naomi's God. And we look at the story here, and we see these two women who've come back to Bethlehem for bread. So you have to go about getting the bread. It wasn't that just bread was just laying around like when the children of Israel were out in the wilderness and they just went and picked it up. Going back to Bethlehem to get bread was going to mean hard work. And if you came this morning looking for the beautiful love story, I want to tell you, if you are if you're a person who enjoys working hard, you're going to love this story. Because it's all about hard work today. In fact, Ruth goes to the field to start gleaning in the field, and she's worked herself tired, and she's taken a break when Boaz comes to the field. And it's interesting, and it may be something that is lost on us as to why it was that she felt like she could just go to any field that she wants. Because, I mean, here in Alamance County, a man's crops is a man's crop. And unless it's opened up to the community, for someone just to come walk into your garden and start to picking all of your produce, just to start taking it away, or maybe just picking it and throwing it down on the ground and walking out, I mean, there should be consequences for that. Somebody needs to go out and talk to the deer, Brother Clifton, because they think that they're entitled to come and just take a bite out of your tomatoes or your squash or whatever it is that they want. And those wasps, they love to come after your green beans. Why is it that Ruth can just walk into this field and start picking? Well, you have to understand the heart of our God. In Leviticus 19, verses 9 and 10, there's a provision made for widows and for the strangers. Leviticus 19, verses 9 and 10, "And when you reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not wholly reap the corners of thy field, neither shalt thou gather the gleanings of thy harvest. And thou shalt not glean thy vineyard, neither shalt thou gather every grape of thy vineyard. Thou shalt leave them for the poor and stranger. I am the Lord your God." And in an act of grace, God tells Israel, "Listen, I'm going to bless you. And when I give you crops, don't go and pick the field as though you're grasshoppers, where you take everything and just wipe it out. Leave some. Leave some in the corners. Leave some for the strangers and for those in need." And it was God's way of providing for those in need. And you know how he did it? Through your garden. Through your fields. He had Israel leave the corners of their field so that there would be a little bit, so that someone coming into the country or that someone who was in need had access to what they needed, even just at the basic level, they'd at least have some bread. And that's what's wonderful and beautiful about this simple blessing, that there was a provision for Naomi and for Ruth in going back to Bethlehem. It's that gift that's there waiting for them, for the widows and the strangers. And you say, "Well, wait a minute, that doesn't sound very fair." Remember, they're not to pick all of the fields. They're supposed to leave some of the grains in the field and the grapes on the vines, because those who are in need can come and glean, can come and gather what they need. It's not a broken system where they just sit and they're just waiting for the handout. It's they're going and they're working those fields. And so for Ruth to go to the field to get the food that's waiting for her, it's going to take some work. And if you've ever worked in a garden, it is hard work. I mean, you got to keep out the grass and the weeds. And then you got to fight off, of course, the wildlife that comes to eat it. And then you got to worry about, of course, the rain. And, of course, the worry part, something that you do when you're not in the field, because you're out working in the field when you're working in the field. But when you're not in the field and you worry about what's happening in the field, you realize, if you've ever raised a garden, how gracious God is in his gift of just the right amount of sunlight, just the right amount of rain, just the right, you're going to spend the one who, and I know probably some of you are wondering, how in the world do you get this billionaire? Because we don't really find anything about his holdings in here. So I'm going to ask you to take a stretch with me and realize that when I'm talking about a billionaire, I'm talking about grains of seeds. And so maybe he's got in a barley field, in the wheat fields, wherever, when you look at the sum total of the seed storehouses, he's got billions and billions. And it doesn't take that long when you start looking at these tiny little seeds. But we find in the scriptures that he's known as a mighty man of wealth. He's got a lot going for him. And I want you to know that if you're just reading the story for the romance, that's the way the romance stories usually start, at least if I'm hearing it right. I don't read them, I don't know. But if I'm hearing it right, you have to have that element of that really handsome, rich man to make the story all that more interesting. Because if someone looks like me and just broken and poor, you don't want to hear about that story. But we find as we look at Boaz, who's wealthy, he is of the family of Elimelech, and his name is Boaz. It happens to be that Ruth goes to his field, of all the fields that she could go and gather. And you think, well, okay, that sounds good. Family taking care of families. Isn't that the way it's supposed to be? Absolutely. I think as we look at the story, though, that Ruth happening on the field of Boaz was not an accident. It was the providence of God. As we are going to see the story unfold throughout this series. And when she comes to his field, he offers her more than his wealth. He doesn't just find out about what she needs and just say, well, here's a check. Take this and go down and get what you need. He offers her so much more than just simply giving her money to make her go away. We find him welcoming her to his field. As a matter of fact, I realize how much Bethlehem has got to be like Alamance County. How a little bit of news travels a long way fast. How that everyone knew Ruth's and Naomi's story when she comes back to Bethlehem, because we find that they're met at the story in chapter 1, where they're met and people know about the business that's going on. It seems to be that Boaz doesn't really know exactly who she is. Maybe he's heard of the story, but when he comes to his field and he sees this woman working in his field, gathering and gleaning of the grain, that he wants to know who she is, and everyone, the hired hand, the head honcho on the field, he's the one that gives Boaz the dirt, so to speak, and says, hey, this is Ruth. Now, I want you to know that there is a rubbing point, sticking point right here, that Ruth is in Boaz's gardens. And I know I showed you a scripture just a moment ago talking about the provisions of blessing the stranger and of blessing the widow. But the law was certainly clear that Ruth was unwelcome. In Deuteronomy 23, verses 3 through 6, children of Israel given this instruction, an Ammonite or Moabite shall not enter into the congregation of the Lord. Even to their 10th generation shall they not enter into the congregation of the Lord forever, because they met you not with bread and with water in the way when you came forth out of Egypt. Because they hired against thee Balaam, the son of Beor, of Pethor, of Mesopotamia, to curse thee. Nevertheless, the Lord thy God would not hearken unto Balaam, but the Lord thy God turned the curse into a blessing unto thee, because the Lord thy God loved thee. And thou shalt not seek their peace, nor their prosperity all thy days forever. So history should be a reminder to Boaz that Ruth shouldn't be welcome in his field. Because when his forefathers came into the region, that the Moabites didn't welcome them with food. They didn't offer grace to help take care of just their basic needs. And we find Boaz welcoming Ruth into his fields. He allows her to work his fields. And why is that? Because there's got to be this divine struggle between what the law says about turning your back on the Moabite and helping that one in need. See, Ruth did need help. Boaz was only going to driven to Naomi. But Ruth did need help. And Jesus sets the story straight in Mark 12, verses 28 through 31, how it is that you reconcile this difficulty. It's one of the scribes, having heard them Mark tells us in verse 28, reasoning together and perceiving that he had, which answered them well, asked him, which is the first commandment of all? And Jesus answered him, the first of the commandments is, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind, and with all thy strength. This is the first commandment. And the second is like, namely this, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. There is none other commandment greater than these. And Boaz sees a neighbor in need, and he allows Ruth to glean his fields. And so, in allowing her to work his fields just to be there, it was part of that commandment that we saw there earlier. The provision for the widow and for the stranger. But Boaz goes even further than just letting her be there. He gives her favorable working conditions. Look with me at verses 8 and 9. Then said Boaz unto Ruth, hearest thou not, my daughter? Go not to glean in another field, neither go from hence, but abide here fast by my maidens. And he does two things for her here. He tells her, don't go somewhere else. Stay here, get what you need, and work by my maidens. Let thine eyes be on the field that they do reap, and go thou after them. Have not I charged the young men that they shall not touch thee? When thou art athirst, go unto the vessels and drink of that which the young men have drawn. And his act of grace, I mean, he unloads on her grace. Don't go anywhere else. I want you to work with my ladies. And the young men, they're not going to bother you. I'm not going to allow them to bother you. You work with the young ladies. And I want to say, ladies, is that a good arrangement that she's allowed to work with the ladies and not having to work with those stinking old men? I think so. But it's not just that. Also, he tells her, whenever you're thirsty, go get the water that you want from my servant. He's giving her the blessings and the benefits of being like one of his servants. That whatever he has set up there at the field for her to have access to, he wants her to have access to it. And we find that Ruth recognizes his grace. We see that in her response to him. Scriptures tell us in verse 10 that she falls on her face. And I know we use that phrase, head over heels. But this is one of those moments that she's not swooned, that she's just goo goo gaga in love with Boaz, but she realized what's here. She shouldn't be here. She doesn't have the entitlement to be here, and he's showing her grace. And so she bows her head. She says, why have I found grace in thine eyes that I should take, that thou shouldest take knowledge of me, seeing that I am a stranger? What in the world is it about me that you've taken interest in me? And we see in Ruth's moment right here where she bows her head humbly, not just here, but going back to the earlier events of the day, that Ruth's heart has been demonstrated to Naomi and to Boaz about her commitment. She left Moab. And I think that's important to point out when you're looking at the Deuteronomy passage and considering about the curse and how Israel was not to follow after, not try to pursue that peace with Moab. It was because Moab didn't show that grace. And the problem when you look at Israel's history is that she was always wanting to go away from the promised land and try to get in good with the people that could not offer her what God had in store in his rich blessings. They wanted to find a way around it. They wanted to skirt around the reality that there is blessing and peace in serving God. And Ruth demonstrates that even when it got tough, I've come to Bethlehem, this strange place where everybody knows my business, and now I'm working. You knew all be good one another who we serve below. And that we should be encouragers to one another to do right. We should be encouragers to one another to get back on the path of doing right. And Ruth is demonstrating her heart here at this field, and it, even though she might have even had to swallow her pride, I don't know, the scripture just says she bowed her head because she realized her station, her position. She's not worthy to be here. Boaz is showing her abundant favor. And what does he do in verse 11 and 12? He shows her blessing. And Boaz answered and said unto her, "It hath fully been showed me all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thine husband, and how thou hast left thy father and thy mother and the land of thy nativity, and art come unto a people which thou knewest not heretofore. The Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust." And Boaz says, "May the Lord bless your work, because you have come to my field today not looking for my blessing, but you're looking for God's provision for you. You're under his wings." Boaz offers this blessing. May the Lord bless you. And I think that's important for us to remember also when we're talking about redemption. For that person who struggled, who has failed time after time again, I said last week, sometimes you can't trust a person's word because they've told you so many times that I'm not going to do that anymore, or I'm going to do better, and they stumble and fall. And we move beyond their words, and we love their heart. We love them for who they are. Even though we can't take their words with a grain of salt, we need to remember who it is that we serve and who it is that we need to encourage them to serve. And Boaz says, "Ruth, may the Lord reward. May the Lord compensate you for your hard work." And I think there's a great lesson in Boaz's responses to our attitudes and actions towards one another, and that's to bless the one in need. I mean, you think about it, it's really easy. It's low-hanging fruit to pick on someone who is down and destitute and who's made poor decisions. And that is difficult. And I think that there's important lessons to learn from someone who does make bad choices, that you certainly should look at that and say, "Hey, Lord, protect me. I don't want to go down that road." And sometimes you have to talk sternly, and sometimes you have to deal with the issue direly. But I want you to know that in this case, we're talking about grace, that blessing the one in need is what Boaz does because he's in a position to, because he's able. So bless the one in need and be the blessing when you are able. Naomi has told Ruth about what awaits her in Bethlehem. There's food. And of all the places for Ruth to go, Ruth goes to Boaz's field. He's the wealthy landowner. And it's not just that aspect, as we're going to see. There's a whole lot more at play in who this Boaz actually is. But we know from the story so far right now that he is in a position to either tell her to get lost or to take all that she needs. And that's what he does. Verse 13, as Ruth responds, "Then she said, 'Let me find favor in thy sight, my Lord. For thou hast comforted me, for thou hast spoken friendly unto thine handmaid, though I be not like unto one of thine handmaidens.'" And she knows her place there. She does not think that, "Hey, I'm entitled to be here." She knows, and she recognizes grace when she sees it. But Boaz doesn't stop there. It's just more grace upon grace in the field. Look with me at verses 14 and 17. "And Boaz said unto her, 'At mealtime come thou hither, and eat of thy bread, and dip thy morsel in the vinegar.' And she sat beside the reapers, and he reached her parched corn, and she did eat, and was suffying, even among all." And provision better. drink when you're thirsty. He invites her to eat and gives her lunch. And he tells the men, he says, let her take. As a matter of fact, spill some of the grain on the ground and let her pick up all that she can take. She's still having to go and work the field. She's going to gather the grain. And gathering the grain is just part of the story, you know, picking it. Because it's still going to have to be reaped and threshed to gather it back up. And at the end of the day, we find out she ends up with about an ephah of barley. After all day long, her effort, she's picked about 30 pounds of barley. That's quite a bit. When you think about doing it the old-fashioned way. And in his grace upon grace that he shows her, he gives her even more favorable conditions. The provision was, don't pick up the field's corners. And let them come in and just work it. And don't work the fields completely empty, but leave some for them. But he's gone beyond measure by telling his men, leave measure on the ground for her to come and pick up. Don't give it to her. Let her come pick it up. She's going to work it. But let's give her from our abundance. And we see that his heart is revealed by his graciousness. And I think that's important to point out here as redeemed people, that our hearts should be marked by our graciousness because we have a heart that Jesus has given us. This new heart operates with new rules and new principles, and it is a heart that bestows grace. And for the story, so we move on this morning. The point that I see in this first portion of the chapter, Ruth working in the fields, that grace goes farther than you may ever know. For Naomi, she's sitting at home, wondering where the next meal's come from. Doesn't know if Ruth has gone to the field and has worked, had any success, because Ruth's been gone an awful long time. For Ruth, she happens to go to just the right field to find someone who's going to give her not just a great workplace, but he's going to bless her and enrich her with what she came after. She's going to have to work for it, but he is being gracious to her. And for Ruth, the one who should be unwelcome, she sees this astonishing act of grace in Boaz. And I think as we look at the story, that the grace here, we haven't even scratched the surface of the deep grace that's at work here. Because it looked like it just happened to be happenstance that Ruth wandered into Boaz's field. But I think as we look at the latter part of the chapter, we see that grace is there on purpose. It was D.L. Moody who had this to say about grace. Grace isn't a little prayer that you chant before receiving a meal. It's a way to live. The law tells me how crooked I am. Grace comes along and straightens me out. As we look now at Ruth chapter 2, verse 18. And she took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw that she had gleaned, and she brought forth and gave to her that she had reserved after she was sufficed. Now, wait a minute. I don't know if you caught that, but when Boaz gave Ruth lunch, remember he told her, take the corn, the roasted corn, and he says, you know, sup in the vinegar. She ate all she needed and she was full. She took some of her lunch back to Naomi. What kind of a sweetheart daughter-in-law is this? She's come with a basket of barley, and she's come with, I won't call it I guess it is a warm meal because we are talking about a desert. And I think that's something we should be talking about. When we're thinking about growing barley and wheat, we do it here in terms of the heartland. In North America, we think about how fertile our fields are. You're talking about people who are gardening out in the desert and that they're seeing this blessing and that Ruth has gone to Bethlehem and she's gathered about 30 pounds and she on top of that, she takes Naomi portion of her lunch. And grace astonishes the one who receives it. Verse 19, and her mother-in-law said unto her, where hast thou gleaned today? And where wroughtest thou? Blessed be he that did take knowledge of thee. And she showed her mother-in-law with whom she had wrought and said, the man's name with whom I wrought today is Boaz. Oh, what that must have been for Naomi. Because, you know, we were told in verse 1 about Boaz. He's introduced in the story. Just happened to be good. God is set in motion. Ruth did not leave the promised land, not leave for the promised land, but that Naomi felt inadequate that she couldn't provide. She felt terrible that she didn't have a suitor to give to Ruth. And in divine providence, we find Ruth has met here with Boaz, one of Elimelech's family members. Now I know what you're thinking right now. You're thinking, I know about my brother-in-laws, and there's not a way that I would want to get involved with my brother-in-laws. If I had to marry one of my brother-in-laws, that's it. I'm done, because there's some weirdos. I remember when my sister first got married into her, when she first got married into her family, when she was first married into her husband's family, at the wedding reception, while I'm standing there, her brother-in-law comes up to her and he says, baby, I just want you to know, if anything happens to your husband, I'm going to step up and do the right thing, and I'm going to marry you. And she looked at me and said, oh, no. But we find here in this story how amazing this is. That it didn't go, it just overwhelmed, and that the grace that happened here, that it just astonishes Naomi. We find, as she continues on, that one gracious response does, it seems to flow in two different directions. It flows both ways. In Ruth chapter 2, verse 20, and Naomi said unto her, blessed be he, the Lord, who hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead. And Naomi said unto her, this man is near of kin unto us, one of our next kinsmen. And the grace that Boaz shares with Ruth when he blesses her is met with a blessing by Naomi upon him. And she says, blessed be he of the Lord who hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead. And she says a prayer of blessing for him right here, because she realizes what's at play. That he has acted graciously and he has dealt very generously with her and with Ruth. But she realizes here that there is an opportunity. Now you're thinking, oh, the story's getting good. Now it's getting juicy. That not only that they left because they didn't have food, they came back because they didn't have food. Now they got food. Now we can get on to the marriage stuff, because that's what's important. But I want you to see that when you do a gracious act, that it gives you an opportunity to respond with grace in kind. As Boaz shares grace with Ruth and Naomi, Naomi is appreciative. And I think that's important to say, because sometimes we think about grace and we live in grace so much that we feel like we're entitled to blessing. And we feel like we're entitled to reap all of the blessings of grace, because I'm favored, because I'm entitled to it. And I think the problem with entitlement is that it does not really view the arrangement favorably. Because what it stops looking at the relationship with the grace giver, and it starts focusing on just the accoutrements and the blessings and the things that you gather from the relationship. And it stops, it changes our focus from seeing the blessing of the relationship to where all we look at is just the stuff that surrounds us. We start to be more enamored with the stuff rather than the giver. And for Ruth here and for Naomi, Boaz's grace flowing to them wasn't an arrangement that led them to feel entitled, because Ruth, you know, she had to enter into the field feeling terrible, because she was from Moab. For Naomi, it's led her to see what is going on here in the story and to give back, show her appreciation. And a gracious response shows gratitude. We find in verse 21, and Ruth the Moabite said, he said also unto me, thou shalt keep fast by my young men until they have ended all my harvest. And Naomi said unto Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that thou go out with his maidens, that they meet thee not in any of the field. So she kept fast by the maidens of Moab to glean until the end of barley harvest and of the wheat harvest, and dwelt with her mother-in-law. And so for the next few months, I believe for 4 months, She continues to work in Boaz's fields because Boaz has gone out of his way to show grace to her. You're talking about gleaning in the fields. The gleanings in his her. Say, you field, someplace for me, this is for me. Boaz's field, because they both realize the blessing that's there. They both realize the graciousness that's there. And for her to go back and continue working in the fields shows her gratitude. She's not doing this because she's entitled to. She's doing it because she certainly appreciates what he has done for her. And I think I'd like to say this again. Grace is not entitlement. And if you're in a position to give grace, to share because you're in that position of blessing, that you can help and be an encouragement, that you can help by taking care of someone's needs, that you're in a position that you can share grace, you do so knowing that you've got the upper hand in the arrangement and that it's costing you dearly, and that the person that you're giving to is not entitled. You're doing so because it's an act of worship. You're doing so because it's an act of grace. And for the person who's receiving it to think that, well, I mean, because I've came and asked, you've got to do it. Because I have come here, I mean, you're supposed to do this. This is the arrangement I ask and you give. Sometimes we view God that way. God, I ask you, and you didn't answer my prayer the way I thought you should. And so that's it. I'm done, and I'm ready to get out of here, and I'm ready just to go back to the way things were when it was a lot easier, when I didn't have to worry about trusting you, that I could just worry about making my life my own way. And for Ruth, who's here in this moment, she certainly does realize what is at stake. She shouldn't be welcome here, but she is. She shouldn't have been dealt with so generously, but she has been. She has an opportunity not just to go out and work the field, but to be a blessing to her mother-in-law as well. But I think the counterpoint to grace not being an entitlement is this: an unwelcoming heart will abuse grace every time. And if you know anything about grace, you can't abuse grace, but you can take it for granted. If you've ever done something for someone, if you've ever showed some kindness to someone and you tell them, get what you need, you mean it, get what you need. And if someone comes to you and they tell you that they need just a little bit and they get a little bit, they haven't abused you. They've met what you've given to them, to their need. And if someone comes to you and says, I need a little bit more, what do you do at that point? Do you cut off the fountain or do you keep it going? I see this all the time, and it happens a lot around here. People come up and they need help and they need handouts, and I have to be careful because sometimes it's really easy to get to that judgmental place. Well, you've been here 7 times in the last week. Something's got to give, and there's nothing left to give. I think whenever someone comes up here, I try to give, even if I can't meet their need fully because it's just not there, I try to give something towards it. And whatever I offer, usually it will reveal their heart, because sometimes somebody will come and say, I need a little bit. And I say, okay, well, I'll give you exactly that. You said you needed diapers. Here's some diapers. Oh, no, I don't want that diapers. I need some money to buy diapers. But I've given you diapers, but I don't need that. I need money. Well, then you didn't ask for money. You asked for diapers. Oh, just forget it. And they walk away. And I've had someone come up and say, I'm out of gas. Can you help me with gas? Sure, I'll help you with gas. And I went to the gas station, put some gas in the car. As soon as I put the pump into their car and clicked the handle, it clicked off because the tank was full. Well, how'd that happen? They said. Well, I guess my needle's broken in my car. And I said, yeah, it's broken. It's stuck on full. But I have to remember, and we have to remember, that being gracious isn't being judgmental in the fact that you are in a low point and I am in a high point and I've got the upper ground here. Because we've considered at the end of the day, every one of us are just beggars who are encouraging other beggars as to where they can go and find bread. And grace isn't just a prayer that you pray before a meal. It's a way of life. So the unwelcoming heart abuses grace every time. Here's our response. A little grace goes a long way. For Ruth, humility is hard work. For someone in her position, it's difficult. And I think that's difficult. Humility is who to them have to work. You won't take care of me. Then I'll go find somebody else that will take care of me. But let's give people the benefit of the doubt. Let's just consider that coming and asking for help is hard work. And showing grace is hard work. We don't deserve it. As a matter of fact, when you consider the work that Jesus did on the cross for each and every one of us was not easy work. Then when he demonstrated his love toward us, when he lays down his life on the cross of Calvary and he dies, he takes our sin upon him, he's buried, but he rises again the third day. The message of the gospel tells us, illustrates for us how hard grace works. It meets the need perfectly every time. And I'm so grateful that Jesus has made the difference in my life. And I know as you and I leave here today, our model isn't necessarily Boaz. We're going to tell you that to be a Boaz, but it is Jesus is our model. And so whenever I say be the Boaz, what I mean is when you're in a position to help, do so. And do so extravagantly when you can. Because the message that we communicate of how great our God is and that we trust him more than we trust in stuff means that I value you more than I value stuff, says a message of grace that as we look at the story of Ruth, we're going to come into chapter 3, is this romance, as the story blossoms, I should say. As we look at this story, we see that the beauty of what God is doing here isn't just two people coming together, but what God is doing in redemption story. So may our prayer this morning be, Lord, give me the grace to be the blessing.